You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Chris Mueller is a national speaker, author, father of six, and is currently making a Catholic TV show for families as he travels speaking to over 10,000 people each year. Between Chris having over 18 years experience in Catholic lay ministry and Timmery's holding a master's degree in biblical theology, together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
Dear friends, it's so good to be with you this week. I'm excited to bring in studio with me. For those of you who know, this past weekend I was speaking at the Masculine Genius Institute. It was an honor to be able to present there, hanging out with all the men deep into some very profound insights into masculinity. Next year I will have to get some good promotion continuing there so that you guys can make it out. But in studio with me, one of the main organizers is Dr. Philip Chavez. And Dr. Philip Chavez has an incredible background, over 25 years of ministry with work and study behind spirituality, marriage and family, and you work a lot in character development and especially masculinity.
Right. Yeah, that fundamentally started when I did a doctoral dissertation on the formation of character formation of children in human sexuality from Pius X to the present day. And So, that whole experience helped me see certain foundations of character, which I use in my work. But helping men find their place, especially men and women to some extent, but men especially, focusing on that to help them find their place in the church and the world and the family.
So, Philip, your work can be found at the Men's Institute. Can you give us the website for those just checking in for where they can find more?
Yes, for those who want resources, they can go to mensacademypress.com. And if you want to follow me on Facebook, too, you can follow me on The Men's Academy.
Excellent. So I want to dive in here. We're going to talk about our first issue today, and we'll get to know more of you and your work as we go on. But the first issue I want to dive into is the issue of just gender ideology and transgenderism. You know, some Sure. of the most recent information to come out over just the last couple weeks has been an increase number of statistics. And, you know, sometimes we reduce the statistics, but statistics are showing that especially young girls who are looking at making a transition to
Sure.
wanting to identify as a boy, maybe going through a sex change, there's over a 4,000% increase in girls who are wanting to go through with this change.
Right.
Now, this is really interesting because what we're seeing is a 50% increase in attempted suicide in these same exact girls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the reasons I think that's the case, somebody who wants to move through some kind of transgender journey, I think they're finding a lack of identity within themselves. And then in other words, they're not happy with themselves. They don't feel lovable. They don't feel worthy. They don't feel acceptable. And so there's a tendency then to figure out, well, how can I transfer that? Now, obviously, they're influenced by a number of factors. But I think fundamentally, there's a self-loathing of self that thinks, well, if I just transform the person I'm in, then maybe I can be acceptable in that way. Now, this, in my opinion, especially affects young women because young women move in a modality that is very relational. Men, it's about what you do. So the reason I think there's so much more suicide within women, it's an issue which cuts more to their being because a woman moves out of her identity. A man can get lost in the things he does. And so in some way, he can move in that realm and find some sense of satisfaction, even though he may be despairing on other levels. A woman, once her identity is undermined and she can't find it or accept it or receive it, she stays and remains in a great despair.
I wonder, it's interesting because you think about the whole LGBTQ movement and, I mean, you put a face to the names. The reality is that more women right now, it seems to be, there's an increase in women wanting to transition into identifying as boys, having sex changes. But generally, it's more men who are identifying as living a gay lifestyle.
Yeah, I think that's right. I'm not sure entirely how to comment on that. I guess because in some ways, men are more they're more audacious and are willing to confess that more readily and not really care so much about the effects or other circumstances surrounding that. Women, on the other hand, I think, they will continue to seek this because, again, I think what's happening in society, more and more as we lose identity and we lose a sense of our dignity and identity, that will directly in some way touch women much more than men. Mm-hmm. But men, when they come out, will be more flamboyant, more open, more, I think, in some way conversational, at least out in the public, they will be.
That's Dr. Philip Chavez. My name is Timory Millington. You are listening to Trending. We're talking about this gender crisis, an increase in young girls who are wanting to transition to becoming men. Studies coming out of the United Kingdom shows there's over a 4,000% increase in girls who want to identify and have their sexual organs changed to male organs. And what is just shocking about this is that we're ultimately running health experiments on young children because we don't fully know the long-term impact of this. We do right. know things such as there's risk of osteoporosis. We're ultimately sure. completely botching and preventing any fertility mm-hmm. in these young children down the road. But what, you know, I just can't understand why we're willing to run this science experiment on our children.
Yeah, it's in principle, what this whole transgender movement will have an interior conflict. I mean, we could talk about the physical effects, and there will be them based upon some of the things that are prescribed for them to maintain that kind of identity. But even more so, the soul is united with the body. And if you transfer the body to another identity, the soul still operates in the identity of the sex it was born in. And so a woman's soul, it doesn't move, it doesn't roll in a man's body. So there's going to always be some very deep conflict. In fact, one of the reasons I think suicide is as high as it is, because that conflict reaches a very high level. In other words, the soul just cannot harmonize, a female soul cannot harmonize in a man's body.
Mm, interesting. And a suicide, other than in China, where the one-child policy, or now you could say two-child policy, is most prominent, other than in China, it's a higher risk or a higher execution of suicide among men, not women. Again, except for China, where women are despairing over the issue of abortion.
Sure.
And so when we look at this, you're talking about the soul. And, you know, to some people, we don't talk about there being a feminine and a masculine soul.
That's
yet,
right.
Yet the body points to this. Our
exactly.
body and even neuroscience points to the difference between men and women.
Sure. Yeah, and that will continue to to affect, and they'll continue to have to manage that no matter where they go and what they do in life. So in relationships, what's going to be a conflict, and one of the reasons I don't think they get along with others very well is because, again, if you have a female moving with a feminine soul in a masculine body, she really can't relate. She, being the original she, can't really relate in a man's body to others. In fact, in some way, there's going to be even greater conflicts. And, of course, those conflicts are seen, too, in those around them who just kind of don't understand this. And most people can't, they can't receive that. They can't harmonize with that when they see that contradiction. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's claimed, too, that's an aggravating cause for the suicide itself. But I think it may be. I mean, there may be outside influences affecting those or you can say even persecuting those or rejecting those with transgender identity. But I think for the most part, it's an interior discord. It's an interior problem.
You know, and some of you may wonder, why does this matter? You know, I know that the issue of gender ideology, homosexuality is real, even in the church today. But this doesn't necessarily affect me. But we want to equip you to be able to discuss these issues. I ran into a friend at the airport when I was traveling just a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And he was sharing with me within his own family. And I have to emphasize this, within his own family, his niece had just come out as identifying as transgender. And, you know, we're seeing so many people, young children, all of a sudden choosing this as their way to say, look, I'm starving for attention. There's
exactly.
something going wrong. And, you know, in many cases, parents are splitting up. There's marital conflict, conflict in the home, lack of attention. And so children are going, pay attention to me.
Yeah. And the difficulty is it makes that problem, it just exacerbates the whole situation, right? Because that change disaffects the family, and then husbands and wives disagree about how to lead their children from there. The brothers and sisters don't know how to relate. So once that leap is made, it does affect all the relationships that person is in.
Now, what would you say are some of the main differences between the feminine and masculine soul and how that is lived out? Because we're going to talk a lot later about masculinity and what the man's role is.
Sure. Well, again, I find that, as I mentioned earlier, women tend to move in who they are. They tend to move in an identity. And everything about women, it seems to be very identity driven, where men, it's about what they do. You know, that's when men wake up in the morning, they want to know, okay, what do I do next? Now, the deeper issue, of course, is identity, and who you are is more important than what you do. So that's one way in which men and women are different. Another is, say, if we take, for example, the John Paul II's Masculine Genius, a man has a sense, when he thinks rationally different. And in other words, he works in the more abstract and the universal. A woman somewhat operates in the more particular and the concrete. So say, for an example, in a family situation, a mother can see the needs of the child in particular ways that the father can't see. However, in some way, a father has a sense and a gifting for a certain governance where he could see what may be good for the whole family. Even though one person in the family may not benefit, he nonetheless will have the courage to say, no, this is what's best for the family. So again, he sees those universals and the abstract, where again, the woman sees the concrete. And we need both giftings in the family, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And neuroscience points to this in some ways, just in the way the brain is developed. And
yes.
How women have a more interconnectivity between the left and right sides of the brain,
yes,
all over the place. Men have the same number of connections, but they're within same regions of the brain. And so
sure,
they're able to develop and dive into one area, but they
exactly
don't have that relational element
exactly
as much.
That's why it's proper and fitting that men engage in war, right? They need to take that hill. They know how to focus on just that one end and get that accomplished.
Excellent. That's Dr. Philip Chavez. My name's Tim Ray Millington. Coming up, we're going to talk a little bit about what is it to be a man today and what are some of the challenges in light of allegations such as against Brett Kavanaugh, among other things. And we'll be talking a lot about what the man's mission is.
Chris and Timmery will be right back. Tweet them at C Mueller Tweets, spelled M-U-E-L-L-E-R. And at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
Timmery here in studio with me. I have Dr. Philip Chavez. You guys, you will love all of his work. I was just listening to some of his CDs on the way up here. I had the opportunity to present with him this weekend at the Masculine Genius Institute. But he's covering an area of development that we so desperately need in the church. There's so much surrounding feminism, femininity. What does that mean? How do we respond to contraception and abortion? But there are two people involved in all of these sexual crises. And so you can go check out his work at the Men's Academy. You can head over to mensacademypress.com and also find the Men's Academy on Facebook. Dr. Chavez, we've been getting into the differences between the feminine and masculine soul. And today, you know, I've got to comment, you know, I think listeners have known we've talked about the Supreme Court issue from the perspective of abortion and the future of abortion in our country. But just briefly, I look at what is happening with Brett Kavanaugh, the accusations being made against him, the lack of evidence that is there. And I want to just be quick caveat, because I know
sure
people are going to raise their arms, say any sexual abuse claim should always be looked into. However, so far, this man has been through multiple FBI investigations. The evidence is not there. The quote-unquote witnesses that have come up have not agreed with the statements that have been made, said they have not witnessed any sexual misconduct by Brett Kavanaugh. And what I look at here is many men and even women, I'm hearing moms saying, I'm concerned for my husband, for my sons, for my children. What does it mean in today's world where a Facebook post or any accusation suddenly destroys the character of a man?
Yeah, this is a very unfortunate situation, but I think what it's indicative of is the rejection or the disparagement of men universally. And so I think what's happening, yes, in this lack of identity of men and somewhat of the movements of feminism, I think what's happening is a man's role, his position, his status, his dignity is somewhat disparaged and just not well respected. And so the difficulty with this Kavanaugh situation is that the man, I think universally, I think there's some idea that now a man has to almost presume that he's guilty until he's shown to be innocent. So where there should be presumed innocence, there's not anymore. And I think that's fundamentally because of the rejection of men in society.
It just breaks my heart. You know, I don't go deeply into politics. I make the joke, unless mm-hmm I'm talking about abortion, sex, or contraception.
Sure.
But I have watched his testimonies. I've watched his interviews with his wife right there by his side. And I've even heard men, you know, men who I would call gentlemen of the old school who may not practice their faith in any capacity, but still have, you know, fundamental principles that they were brought up with, who have commented looking at Brett Kavanaugh in his interview. And here's a man you can tell of profound integrity and faith.
I think that's right. And that, again, like you say, that manifests itself in the interviews and in his testimony. One of the things you see that when it was when he did talk about those accusations against him, you know, it's interesting. He didn't malign anybody in the course of that. He just stated the facts. He stated what exactly happened to him. As hard as those details were, it almost looked like he was making an indictment against others, but he really wasn't. He was just stating the facts. And so here's a man who is really a credit to men, you know, with the way he can hold a composure, being so accused and yet not willing or expressing in any way that I could see any malice toward even those of his accusers.
No one. And yeah. I think that this is what made me finally decide to cover this is I looked at him and there was such kindness as his whole life and reputation is being destroyed. I mean, even just hearing the examples where his daughter is there praying and they're praying and she decides to pray for, you know, Christine Ford, who has brought forward these accusations. And then people are mocking the daughter for praying and what she'll pray for. And I just look at this and, you know, there are no boundaries, yet he is having a boundary to not go after someone who is coming after him and his reputation.
Right.
Not once.
That's right. What's interesting is this. In all of this, it's just a manifestation of a man who's lived his life well-lived and in virtue, that he's able to, maintain himself the way he has, with composure, with dignity, with self-reassurance. You could tell that that's just not founded on a man who's been trained for a testimony. It's founded on a man who's well-grounded in virtue, who's well-grounded in the common good. Who's grounded in himself being a selfless and giving man.
This matters because we need to figure out how to help young men, and all men, but young men in particular, to know that even when your honor, your integrity is being called into question, how do you still develop in integrity, develop in that valor?
Sure. Well, that's a very wide question because we can get into the things men should be doing and maybe other things in the way men should be positioning themselves in their identity. With respect to what men should be doing, if we're talking about traditional roles of leader, protector, and provider, these are very unintelligible to the young men. So they don't even know what to do. In fact, that's a common question with young men. Just show us what to do. Where do we go from here? How do we act? And so that's a very fundamental confusion. But I think even at a deeper level, men today are finding difficulty in somewhat their own identity, as we spoke about earlier, where they really don't have it. In other words, a primal identity in the spiritual and the natural order is to be a beloved son. And it's almost like if you can't find dignity, can't find rest, and can't find a foundation in who you are, just acting through these things won't really be enough. A foundation of who you are must be solidly in place for a man to move forward, or a boy or an adolescent. And so because they're lacking in that, it's very, very hard for them to move forward at all. And they're very confused as a result.
So, Philip, would you say, you know, mentorship is important for young boys?
Absolutely. The mentorship in some way is I think, by far the most critical in terms of what they need from society. The difficulty is even a boy or a young man, adolescent, who's had a good father, nonetheless, men are very complicated, and they need several mentors in their life to teach them a host of skills. And when they do learn skills and they do learn to be capable, then that helps them overcome many of the fears that they have.
And I think a lot of the studies out there point to the fact that specifically men, young men, need to see men in all different stages of life.
I think that's right.
Different ages.
That's right.
So a 5-year-old boy needs to see a 15-year-old adolescent.
Yes.
He needs to see, you know, a young man getting married who's married. He needs to see, you know, someone like a grandfather, uncle type of, you know, ages in life so that he has something to learn from, to pick up and maybe push away as well.
That's right, and something to grow into. Mm-hmm. So if a young boy learns how to respect, say, his uncles, older uncles, and his grandfathers, then he learns, he sees that, again, he can see the dignity of that and connect with that in love, then he will aspire to that. I think what's happening in today's day and age, you hear a lot of young people say, you know, I don't really want to live past 70 because, you know, I don't want to deal with the effects of old age and I don't want to be in a home where other people are going to take care of me. Mm-hmm. They fail to see the dignity of those of growing old, and the good that actually can become of that, to share wisdom from that. And so if they're not exposed to that, they're not going to learn to respect and revere that and want to become that.
You know, I think dignity is a word that is thrown out within Catholic spheres, but you don't really hear outside of that. You know, I think that, you know, we've heard some campaigns for office use that word, but even then, you know, what does dignity mean? And at the heart is this self-value, right? This worth at the heart of who we are.
Right.
And, you know, I look at, you know, we started talking about Brett Kavanaugh. He's someone who sees value in himself.
I think so.
But also clearly value in others, that he's not willing to run down that path.
That's right. To violate their dignity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, Brett Kavanaugh, like any good Christian man, it just seems that he understands that his dignity is in God's love for him, I think, ultimately. And that's where we all find our dignity. Most of us, I think, try to achieve that and find that in things we achieve and what we do. And of course, that just leaves us in fear, leaves us in disparagement, can leave many in depression. But yeah, unless they really learn what it is to embrace that their dignity is founded in God's love for them and God's eternal calling for them, and that calling to be in union with Him, that really is the fundamental basis of identity. And all of us really need to move in that, not just receive that, but also continue to grow in that.
Coming up on the show, we're going to be talking with Dr. Philip Chavez about what is a man's mission, the call to leader, protector, and provider. But I want to touch a little bit more on this mentorship side. And I know it's going to tie in more later as well. But mentorship, you know, maybe I think this is something that men, because they've lacked mentors, don't know how to mentor.
That's right.
So how can we help, you know, some of the men listening? Well, how do I even begin to try and mentor? You know, what, do I just pick up a random kid off the street?
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, this may sound a little strange, but I think the best way to kind of move into the role of a mentor is one imagining positioning himself like when he was a kid. What does he wish somebody would have reached out to him to do? Mm-hmm. You know, maybe to teach him how to throw a basketball or even how to box or how to build something. Most men wouldn't know what to do if they opened up the hood of their car. Most men wouldn't know what to do if there's a leak in the ceiling. Most men wouldn't know what to do if there's a leak in the kitchen or the toilet. Men need to teach them all of these hosts of skills. It's survival skills as well. Skills, too, on how to protect somebody else. If a child or somebody you know in a restaurant starts choking, what do you do? You know, if somebody falls over from a heart attack or a stroke, what do you do? So all of these skills, I think, they're incumbent on a man to learn, women as well. But these things empower a man and help him grow in confidence.
A couple months ago on the show, I mentioned how we're afraid of telling other people that we need help or asking for help because we don't want to burden others. But part of what you're saying is making me think in a practical, you know, maybe you've got to clean out the rain gutters before the season comes.
Sure.
And you invite maybe that boy across the street who's just kind of skateboarding outside, mm-hmm. or maybe a nephew or someone, say, hey, do you want to come help me out? And why? Because both he has the opportunity to learn a skill, but to be with another man in that instance.
Sure. But I think at the basis of that is the inability of a young person maybe to relate and to reach out. In fact, for that matter, even to an older person to relate and reach out. In other words, I think because people are so blocked in relationship today, everybody's closed, they stay in their own world, they hunker down into their circumstances. Because of our failure to grow in many relationships, we fail to grow in that in those roles of being mentored or being mentors themselves.
Oh, there's so much to unpack here. Coming up, we're going to be talking about what is the man's mission. I know so many men who are hungry to know, what am I called to? Just give me the manual and I will follow it.
That's right.
So coming up on the show with Dr. Philip Chavez.
You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
I'm so excited to be taking up this issue today because as we are facing a crisis in the culture, I mean, just the conversation over abortion itself today is so intense. You know, the cultural landscape of politics and just the fact that we can't even have a conversation anymore points to a deeper wound, and that is, who are we as men and women? How do we relate to each other? How do we grow on our own? And how do we grow one another? And so with me in studio is Dr. Philip Chavez, and we're talking today about masculinity. And I'm just going to throw this question right out there, because it's complex, but it's your work. What's the man's mission? Any man's mission?
Yeah, the man's mission is, I like to at least sum it up in a six-part role in natural and supernatural. I believe it's fundamentally to be a selfless and sacrificial leader, protector, and provider. And in the Christian realm, that there's a certain perfection of that leader, protector, provider in the priest, the prophet, and the king. People can understand what leader, protector, provider means. Priest, prophet, and king, even though that was at our baptismal rite, most of us don't really know what that is. But it's very, very simple. A priest is the one who sacrifices for the sake of others. A prophet is one who learns the truth and gives testimony in word and deed. And a king is one who is a servant kingship, one who uses his gifts to contribute to the kingdom of God. Mm. And so those gifts won't be very effective, in my opinion, unless that leader, protector, and provider is established first, for which the priest, prophet, and king is built upon. And so that's what I see as one of the problems for the lack and the fruitfulness of the exercise of those duties of Christianity.
So let's tease this out more. You know, sure. One of the first positions you mention is being a leader, and sure. That plays into all three, priest.
It does.
Priestly role, the kingly, the prophetic.
It does. You know, men by nature, they want to be leaders. They aspire to that. You know, I mean, the movies that they find were great heroes of whatever type, they admire the leadership in them. And most men, when they see these movies, they think, gosh, I want to be led too by somebody like that. I want to become that. But again, it's important that leadership isn't a certain dominance or an exercise of power over one another. It needs to be a servant leadership, one which is selfless and sacrificial. And I think that's when it really comes together for men. It's been difficult in today's day and age. Well, first of all, he's not been empowered in that or encouraged in that. But, you know, as he moves in this realm today where women, probably their number one boast, you could correct me on this, is that they're independent. It's the one thing women today want to say about themselves more than anything else. So the difficulty is men are finding it hard just to even understand their place, let alone move forward with in an environment of women who profess that their independence is the most important part of their found femininity.
Well, and isn't it so interesting that women are touting their independence, right? Yet women are very relational. And yes. Then men who have actually, in many ways, a strong sense of independence, they need to be able to stand on their own two
sure.
feet, are looking out and going, well, where is everyone else? You know, where is that relationship? Where is the mentorship? Where, you know,
that's right.
And I want to touch too, because I want to be really careful when we talk about leadership. I think some men are going to push back. I'm more of a follower than a leader.
Right.
And I think leadership also has to do with leadership of character, leadership of sacrifice, leadership
right.
of self and what I do, not necessarily, you know, the head CEO of a
sure.
major organization.
Yeah, that's right. And it's to take initiative in what he does and what he needs to do. He's in a convention and some woman, it's night, she's walking to her car. Well, can I escort you to your car? You know, it's many things of initiative he can take to move forward in any kind of virtue or anything he needs to do. There's a certain leadership that he has too when he's just a good example as a good student, or when he's simply in the workplace, that he does his job well. He leads by example. So yes, you're right. There's many different ways of talking about leadership.
And you know, that's hard too, because I know, you know, questions like, can I escort you to your car? Can I carry that for you? Because women are so used to being independent and even, you know, living alone, taking care of their things, that, you know, if it's offered, even if they would desire to be escorted or have things that they're carried, there's like, well, I am capable of doing it, is I think sometimes the first
sure.
response, or I don't want to burden you as
sure.
well, is another part, versus I think sometimes the desire is just do it, you know, like
sure.
feel free to step into my life. I had a conversation recently actually with my fiance, and we were talking about, you know, carrying things, and
mm-hmm.
and he overheard a conversation between me and one of my friends, and we were complaining about a friend who kind of just leaves their spouse to kind of carry everything, oops, on their own, from car seat, you name it. And he overheard and afterward kind of looked at me and said, hey, you know, do I do that? And I said, no. And I said, but one thing I could say is, in general, I think we women, if you ask us if you'd like us to carry something, the response will be, if we can manage it, no, I'm okay, I can manage.
Sure.
Or I don't want to burden you. But in reality, if you step in and say, here, let me initiate, then, you know, it's respected, it's appreciated most of the time.
Sure. And yeah, and it's a way of sharing, too. It's a way of sharing these things. And yeah, it's a way of saying, too, you know, I want to accompany you in doing this. Mm-hmm. So I think what happens, to just go back a little bit, though, to Marie, is that I think what happens in a lot of women's responses, though, you could correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think they're used to having such offers. And so their way of responding to the shock of it is to reject it.
I could totally agree. Yeah. I think in some cases, it's confusing sometimes, you know, in their instance, oh, you know, I'm okay, you know, don't worry, like, because I think women have this tendency not to want to burden someone. And even, for example, in the workplace, when you talk about men are far more likely to ask for that raise, whether they need it or because they think they deserve it, versus women take into consideration a raise and they know, oh, then, you know, the company only has X so much money right now. They're working on this major project. And so she doesn't end up asking.
Exactly. And what you find in a lot of these situations, especially in ministerial situations or service organizations, you find these women wearing three or four hats almost. In other words, they overcommit themselves because they're afraid to ask, they're afraid to share that load, or maybe even afraid to express it. Hey, this is too much for me. And so what I see happening a lot is women are taking on way too much in the workplace and other even ministerial types of positions.
Oh, absolutely.
And they're working themselves to death often.
But isn't this what's happening in general in the society? And kind of to shift gears a little bit, one of my favorite encyclicals that's in the top, probably top 10, is from Pope Pius XI, and it's Casti Canubi. Mm. And, you know, we're looking right around the 1930s, right, as contraception is being adopted for the first time in any Christian sphere by the Anglican Church.
Sure.
And this document comes out very providentially before the sexual revolution, before widespread adoption of those ideologies. And it talks about how the husband is meant to be the head of the home, and the woman is meant to be the heart. And, you know, we'll tease that out more, but it talks about how when the head is not leading, what ends up happening is the woman always ends up stepping up and taking that role.
That's right. And in virtue of which, if she doesn't find a man really leading, she doesn't really want to procreate either. You know, women are in the whole act of procreation, they understand that there's a great vulnerability to that. And increasing the number of your children, there's a great vulnerability and a great dependence on that. But yes, if women are used to doing things on their own or trusting in their own judgment and lose a sense that they're going to be supported, then they're not going to want to carry children. I think too, yes, if they don't see a leader or a man who's standing up, and if a man, you know, every woman needs to hear from a man, you know, when it comes to child rearing, honey, we'll be taken care of. All will be okay. In other words, he leads in great measure. A man leads by his reassurance. No, he leads by a sense that that he understands God's leadership in his life too, and reassures her. No, God will take care. We will be okay. And I think without that kind of leadership of assurance, overcoming fear, without that, it's very hard for her in some cases to be open to children.
Yeah. Well, and then there's a lot of reluctance in many ways, from dating to even just the dynamic within marriage, or if you're in neither of those roles, within the realm of the workplace and issues with authority.
That's right. Yeah, I think what's happening in the dating world, as you alluded to, men aren't, it's going to be otherwise hard for them to move forward well and securely in a relationship, or moving in a relationship that's developing, if they don't have that leadership capacity down. Because men can only rise up when their role is clear and when they're empowered in that role. So if it's not clear to them, nor do they feel they have strength to move in that role, they're not going to be, I won't say not interested in dating, but it's not going to take much place. And I think this is what's happening to young men today in their 20s. A high percentage of them are in some way disinterested from the whole, how would I say, dating process, because they don't, A, know what their role really is, and don't feel empowered or strengthened or summoned to move forward in those roles.
Hmm. you know, one of the things that you said this past weekend that I think a lot of people will gawk at, but when teased out,
happens often.
And if you've been listening to the conversation so far, and for anyone who's just joining us, that's Dr. Philip Chavez, and he's from the Men's Academy. So many great things coming out of your apostolate and ministry to men.
Thank you.
But you commented this weekend about the husband and how he has that God-given post.
Right. Leadership. That's right. And that's important to understand that, because leadership in some ways, as we come to understand the present time, we look at it more like my influence or how well and effective I am. But a man's leadership role in the family, a husband's role, a father's role, isn't so much of his ability. It's not contingent on his ability. It's contingent upon his God-given office by God himself. And when he defers that and see that God has given him that mission, And he should expect then, if that's what he's called to, that God will give him the grace to see that through.
Mm. And, you know, I was listening to one of your pieces where you talked about how in the garden, ultimately, Adam was alone before God created Eve.
Yes.
And in that, he was learning about himself and
exactly.
how to lead in that moment.
That's right. And in that time with the garden, remember, the only one he related to was the Father. Sure, animals came later on, and he had a leadership over them, but he needed to relate well with a father figure in his life and to receive that leadership and that guidance and that mentoring and that tutoring. And so when he gets that and sees that, especially with God, he does much better.
Chris and Timmery will be right back. Tweet them at C Mueller Tweets, spelled M-U-E-L-L-E-R, and at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
In studio with me, friends, is Dr. Philip Chavez, and we are talking about masculinity. Very provocative content this weekend, and I'm sure there are a lot of people who are going to have questions, who will want to go deeper. So we're just going to have Dr. Philip Chavez on again sometime with
Great.
Your guys' questions, but also go check out his work. He's on Facebook, and you can also find him at mensacademypress.com. I'll be sure to send out links to that and post it in the show notes as well. But we're talking about what is the man's mission. We just talked about leadership, and now we're transitioning into that God-given role of being a protector and a provider.
Sure. Yeah, and those are, like leadership, there's many avenues for that and many expressions of that as protector and provider. In terms of protector, obviously the one we see initially is himself as a physical protector. You know, I mean, out the gate, I think any woman wants to know that if she's in a threatened situation, the man in her life could kick some rear if he needs to. In other words, he can really physically defend her. She depends on his strength. She admires his strength. You know, she likes to put her hands on his shoulders, you know. And so women, I think, feel very much strengthened in that. And so in some ways, too, a man has that projection of the, should have it somewhat of a projection of strength, but a strength always in gentleness. You know, as I say, a man should be a lion and a lamb. I think every woman wants a true lion, a true lamb. A lion is fierce, steadfast, brave, bold, but he's also a lamb who's kind, gentle, compassionate, and caring. Mm-hmm. And I think one way a man protects is he protects in those two modes, and he's both at the same time. He's not a 50-50. He's a 100-100. And so I think what's important, that as much as a man needs to protect a woman physically, he needs to protect her heart. And so he's got to be careful that he's not harsh with her, because her heart is delicate. It's almost like a child's, right? So a man has to, in protecting a woman, he protects the delicacy of her. And not only by how he speaks, how he acts, and how he flexes his muscles even, but everything that he does, and protect her even from the outside, where she's threatened, where she's feels vulnerable, where she's uneasy. I think it's a man's duty to protect her heart in many, many other respects.
Yeah, you're talking about profound strength, but checked with tenderness.
Yes. Absolutely.
Tenderness. You know, and working with especially college age students, when I present about the different, you know, male female dynamics, I'll talk a lot about strength and how physical strength or strength itself, we think just physical strength. And a lot of people push back that, oh, I'm just meant to be strong. And some guys don't want to adopt that ideology for masculinity. And I think there's something wrong there with that.
Yeah.
But I think that we have to help men see that their desire for strength or their discomfort because they feel like they don't have enough. Ultimately, strength starts with strength of character.
And it does, yeah.
That's where it's putting into check the physical virile strength as well.
Sure. Let's go back a little bit. I think, though, when we talk about a man's strength, he'll understand it better if he understands the needs that he's to be strong for. So in other words, if he's to protect a woman's heart, he needs to be told by his mentors and maybe the women in his life, look, you got to be careful. You can wound them. You know, we're delicate. We're like a child. You know, so I trust that you'll be, you know, easy on me. And so men, I think, when it comes to protecting a woman in many different facets, they just don't understand that that's what they're even supposed to do. They don't understand the need that's there.
I hear where you're coming from, that men need to see what they're protecting, why their strength is being built, what it's meant to contribute to. I'm going to push back just a little bit because I know for women, they're going to hear this and they want to be protected. They want to be all that. But maybe some women might not want to think of themselves as that child in relation to the men, because I think a lot of women have a hard time with this idea of neediness. And well, I think at the end of the day, we would recognize there's a sense of vulnerability and dependence. You know, sometimes there's that, oh, there's like, okay, that language. And I think that that's where people begin to reject what they think Christianity portrays.
Sure. And I think, you know, for a lot of these things, so Timur, I think we just have to look at our own hearts and where we're at. And yeah, a woman, I think, again, if she's not admitting these things, she's somewhat in self-defense mode and doesn't want to admit those vulnerabilities, doesn't want to yield to these men's, the roles of men, I think, traditionally, because she doesn't trust them. I think the hard thing is, I think women have been, they've been betrayed. They've been hurt by fathers. They've been hurt by brothers, uncles. And so the men who should have initially set the stage for a woman's, relationship with a man, father, brothers, uncles, cousins, if they don't receive positive dynamics there of the things we're talking about, in adult life, they're not going to really be open or is easily open or disposed to receiving the ways a man serves and protects her.
If you're just joining us in studio on Trending today, I have Dr. Philip Chavez, and we're talking a lot about masculinity. We brought in conversations about gender ideology, you know, the spike in young girls wanting to transition, and about Brett Kavanaugh as well and what's taking place at the Supreme Court. So be sure to go and check out the episode at radiotrending.com. Dr. Chavez, as we've been talking a lot about this place of strength and protection, but also the topic of being provided for. I know that even if women are working, you know, even if they are earning a high level salary, even if they are contributing to the home, studies that have come out of the University of Kent in Iowa show that women still want to be committed to, provided for, protected, all of these things, even if they are contributing in that way and participating. And for those who have been with us on the show, we've been working through Shanti Feldhahn's book, For Women Only, or the better title we like is Knowing More About the Inner Lives of Men. And it talked about how the heaviest burden on all men is this felt responsibility, no matter what that wife's role, position is, contribution is, to provide.
That's right. That's very difficult, and I think very, very threatening for young men today. You know, it's interesting. You know, in days of old, it was always thought that a house is just based on one income, and today they're based on two or even three incomes here in Southern California. So out the gate, a man is very threatened by marriage and the thought of providing, especially if he has to be the one stepping up in the end, that he can carry that burden. So that's really hard. So, yeah, in society, we must make burdens like them, if we can, easier for him to step up to that. But I think the bottom line, too, is Timory, again, as I mentioned before, men need to be coached on how they provide for women. I remember one woman telling me, she was about 30 years old, she just found it unintelligible that a man would actually pay for her on a date. I was actually kind of shocked about that. But I always thought most women in the end really like that. But she didn't really understand that. So, but this is something men should be summoned to do. You know, if you're dating a woman at some serious level of courtship, she needs to know that you have the capacity to provide for her. And that's expressed by, you know, covering every check.
Absolutely. You shared, I've heard a story, even you yourself in your own life, the challenges with your own family and some very serious and tragic deaths, if you don't mind sharing
Sure.
for a moment with the men in your life.
Yeah, thank you. I lost a brother I was very close to. He was only 13 months younger than me, Stephen. I accepted that in peace. But what happened was he had three teenage daughters at the time. But what was interesting, one of the things that woke up in me was this sense that his wife, though fortunately her parents were people of means and helped her, she was still worried about her provision. And my own heart welled up in thinking that, gosh, you know, I wish I could say, Margie, don't worry, I'll take care of you. All will be provided for. Mm-hmm. So I understand that kind of that deep need that men protect the women in the family. And as too, 5 years ago, I had a brother-in-law pass away of a beloved sister, Monica, and they left 8 children behind, 3 to 17. So yes, one of the hardest things I've had to deal with in my life was the failure of not being able to step up and provide for my sister and sister-in-law the way I would have liked to, just to reassure them, to calm them, to make to help them understand all is okay. So feeling that obligation to provide was very, very deep with those experiences.
Thank you for sharing your stories, because I know those are not easy to share, but it points back to that masculine, you know, the heaviest burden, the burden they see is on their shoulders, not just with their immediate family and children, but truly
exactly.
This honor that men have and just this desire to help and care and provide for other people. And
yes,
although a lot of people could say, I don't see that in men today, I don't see that. That's a core value in men.
Sure.
That in many instances, it can be brought back up. And for some, they could just feel inferior and angry and turn away from it, or they could ponder that.
Yeah. Well, in this case, the direction I'd like to take that point is that if a man does have that role and he understands it and rises up to it, he needs to put faith in God that God will help him in that role. If it truly is God-given, then God will give him the means for which he calls him. So I think men can move forward in confidence knowing that God will supply. But again, in terms of provision of women, you know, again, as I mentioned this last week, and it struck me very deeply, I think one of the reasons women didn't have bank accounts or the ability to own property in the past, however we might want to take that, is I think it was the case in all of human history, women were always provided for. There was a sense among men, I'm sure, the women we provide for, they should always feel that they're always taken care of. And I think that was a mentality of the past.
Well, and let's take this into biblical terms. Our Lady was taken into the home of Saint Joseph.
Yes.
And it was believed that neither of them had intentions of sexual intercourse.
Right.
And that's because she had to, at some place in that current culture, had to be cared for and provided for
yes.
by some man. And that's the role that Saint Joseph took for Our Lady.
Yes. And by extension too, to be invited to a man's house is to be invited to his family. So once she surrendered to that, all of Joseph and all of his relatives are responsible for caring for her, not just Joseph.
Philip, it's been so great having you on the show.
Thank you.
There's so much more that I know that we would love to dive into and talk about. He'll be up on another episode of Trending with us. Please go check out his work at the Men's Academy. You know, we don't have a lot out there specifically for men, fortifying men, and it's a wound and a hunger that so many people have. So go check out the Men's Academy on Facebook or mensacademypress.com. God bless you all, and I'm looking forward to the next show with you.
This has been Trending with Chris and Timmery. To learn more about Chris Mueller or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak at your upcoming event, visit everydaycatholic.com or timmery.com.